She's a business mogul.
Number one.
And wellness expert.
How can I help?
And now Chantel Ray and her amazing guests are here to guide you on your wellness journey.
Time to level up.
Welcome to the Waste Away Podcast.
Hi, guys. Welcome to today's episode. And one of my absolute favorite people is Morley Robbins. He's such a hit. He's been on our show so many times because you guys have been begging him to come back. And you guys, it seems like he's one of your favorite guests that we've ever had. So today we are going to be diving deep. We're going to be talking about supplements. Some of you are taking way too many supplements. We're going to be talking about parasites, one of my favorite topics. We're going to be talking about copper and just overall health. And the biggest thing we're going to talk about is if you are tired, we have the cure for being tired. So I'm so excited. Morley, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Chantel. Delighted to be here as always. I look forward to our repartee.
So, okay, let me tell you one of the craziest things that happened to me this past week. And it was, you actually mentioned it, but you didn't like go into detail about it on the show. So there's a place called Restore Cryotherapy, and they have all these different shots and IVs that you can get. You know, that's the big rage right now, is that everyone's deficient in all these minerals. And so they had a special on vitamin D shots. And so I thought, well, you know, they say everybody is low in vitamin D. So I took this vitamin D shot. I mean, it was a really big shot of it. And they gave me a lot because, by the way, I think they've said once you take that shot, you're not allowed to get another shot of vitamin D for 60 days. That means God only knows how much vitamin D they gave me in that shot. When I tell you, I felt so horrible after I took that shot. I got my hands started cramping, my foot started cramping, my legs started cramping. I was just an absolute basking case. And all of a sudden, the first person that popped into my mind, because you're the guru of all gurus, I was like, you know what? I think I remember Morley talking about this on one of my past episodes. And so I went back and listened to it and I was like, I can't believe I didn't remember that. He is adamant on not taking all this vitamin D. We should be getting it from the sunshine. So really talk about that, because that is huge. I'm telling you, I got that vitamin D shot, never felt worse. So tell me why, and why all these people who are like, take vitamin D, but take vitamin D. That's not the answer.
Absolutely. Well, first thing, Mark Twain said it best. When you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to switch sides. So if everyone's telling you to take vitamin D, rather than the other way. And that's just a basic rule of thumb. That's what's guided me for 15 years now doing this work. But vitamin D, I first learned about its downside, and it was back in 2010, and I befriended a world-renowned lipid researcher. His name was Fred Kummerow. He was 98 years old when I met him. He invited me to his home for grass-fed hamburger and homegrown tomatoes. It was kind of a life-changing experience. But Dr. Kummerow had done 10 years of research proving that vitamin D supplements were very hard on our metabolism. He was studying pigs. It was at the University of Illinois. And irrefutable proof that vitamin D is very hard on our body. And he was invited to an international symposium in the early 80s, asked to give a keynote, basically told people, you don't supplement with vitamin D, it's given a very hard time because of that message. And I said, well, Dr. Kummerow, what happened as a result of that conference? Now, you got a picture of this guy. Even though he's 98, he was bigger than I was. He's very vital. He leans forward. And he says, well, Marley, all the others are dead. I'm the only one left standing. And he handed me the research that he had done. stack of studies. It says you need to read those. I did. And then I found all sorts of other studies that the one that really was most chilling for me was by John Ferris, F-E-R-R-I-S. He was a professor of medicine at Yale Medical School. I don't know. I think it's a pretty good school. And the book, again, 1962, that's a long time ago, folks. He published an article that vitamin D supplementation causes renal potassium wasting. So the cramping that you're experiencing is this rush of potassium out of your tissue. And nothing good comes from potassium leaving the tissue. The potassium and magnesium hangs out inside the cell. Calcium and sodium hang out outside of the cell. When you have a sudden loss of potassium, it's going to really mess up the electrolytes. Iron's going to come in. But it's what, probably what you were experiencing was both magnesium loss and potassium loss, but principally potassium. And it's typically, usually when you have cramping in your hands, in your feet, or twitching in your arm, it's pretty well known that you've got a magnesium deficiency. If you have cramping in your legs, it's usually a lack of potassium. So if people are experiencing these leg cramps, that's probably where it is. And we recommend their adrenal cocktails as part of the root cause protocol.
Okay, wait, say that again. So you said what kind of cocktails are you recommending?
It's called the adrenal cocktail. And just the classic adrenal cocktail is fresh squeezed orange juice, which has whole food vitamin C. And you put, it's like 4 ounces of fresh squeezed orange juice. But a quarter teaspoon of sea salt, quarter teaspoon of, cream of tartar or potassium chloride or potassium bicarbonate. Those are all different sources of potassium. And drink it. And we typically recommend that mid-morning and mid-afternoon. Because that's when the adrenals are the most tuckered out. Around 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock, 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that will nurture and feed the adrenals that need to keep track of what's going on from an electrolyte standpoint. And what really regulates the adrenals is the balance between magnesium and sodium. And when we have a lot of stress in our body, it burns these sodium, and then we've got weaker adrenal function as a result. So the adrenal cocktails is just an easy way to boost that.
My gosh. So let me repeat back what I heard you say.
Yes.
So renal potassium wasting can be caused by oral vitamin D3. And the reason why this is bad is potassium is one of the main ways. Well, one, I know that potassium is one of the main ways sunlight is kind of polarized into your cell. Mm-hmm. And also you taking all these, people are gobbling down these versions of D3 because everyone's like, everyone's low in D3. Everyone's low in D3. So they're gobbling that down. And by them taking that, it's getting rid of their potassium, which the potassium and magnesium levels, it's not just having enough magnesium. It's not just having enough potassium. It's also that the levels of those have to be balanced, because if that's not balanced, and because one of the things that I've heard people say is that they take magnesium because everyone says, oh, if you've got leg cramps, you need magnesium. And then they take magnesium and then their leg cramps get worse. But what you just said, it's like ding, ding, ding. No, it's that your potassium has to be increased because that magnesium and potassium has to be balanced. So what you're doing by taking magnesium is you are getting those levels not balanced. Am I right when I say that?
Yes, and what's happening is when you take, again, if you follow the adage, take magnesium if you have a leg, and magnesium is going to push down on sodium. And then sodium is going to get out of whack with potassium. And there's not a lot of minerals that we need to worry about. But we need to worry about the electrolytes, magnesium, potassium, calcium, chlorine, things like that. But we also need to worry about copper. So it's not like we have to worry about 100 minerals. Maybe it's a half a dozen. But the most important are the electrolytes. But the ones that are easily lost to stress, we've talked about this several times, but the minerals that are lost to stress are typically magnesium and copper. Now, in a situation like this, when you're taking high doses of vitamin D, that becomes a stressor. And it's going to affect potassium, a la Dr. Ferris, and nobody's talking about that. Nobody knows what this is doing to destabilize our mineral status. And the other side of it is vitamin D, it was a storage form that you were given. Well, at some point, the body's going to want to convert that into an active form. Well, that requires magnesium. So then you've just taken this bolus of storage D, and you're going to need to activate an enzyme that requires magnesium. And it's just going to, that downstream effects are going to be bedding and buried, and it's just not worth it. And the mantra that everyone's vitamin D deficient is a misnomer. We know that what a lot of people don't know is that much of the research, almost the majority of the research done on vitamin D, is research of correlation, not causation. So what they've done is they've said, well, you have such and such condition and your vitamin D is low, what must be the vitamin D that's causing the condition? That's a correlation study. Do flies cause garbage? No. Do firemen cause fires? No. But they're correlating, right? Flies always seem to be around garbage and firemen always seem to be around fire. But that doesn't mean that the fly caused the problem or is it the fireman caused it. But nor does it mean that vitamin D being low is causing this condition. It turns out that most conditions that people have some level of inflammation. And when there is inflammation, magnesium loss is going to be greater. And when magnesium loss is greater, the ability to make vitamin D is weakened. And so vitamin D will be lower, but it isn't that the vitamin D being lower causes the problem, it's just correlated. And so that's where the real confusion is, and that it was amplifying on steroids during COVID as though taking vitamin D was going to solve the COVID problem, and it didn't. Though it was just being positioned as the, you know, the savior. And it's very, very convoluted and complicated as you can imagine.
So I heard a doctor tell me that he had seen a patient and he was taking so much vitamin D because he kept hearing all this stuff that you should take vitamin D. He took so much vitamin D and he had an excessive amount of calcium in his blood that actually led to kidney damage. Right. So talk about that just a little bit.
Well, every hormone has a job and a location to do that job. Vitamin D's principal job is to increase calcium in the blood at the expense of magnesium. And this is principally taking place in the liver and the kidney. And so vitamin D is not a vitamin, it's a hormone. It's a very powerful hormone, one of the most powerful hormones in the body. Well, vitamin A, its partner, metabolic partner, also has hormone forms. The retinoic acids are all hormones. There's four. And what people don't realize is when they focus on the vitamin D, it's at the expense of vitamin A. And thus, there's no vitamin A uptake in a body that's consuming excess vitamin D. And again, within the root cause protocol, what we're really focusing on, what we're really concentrating on, is making more bioavailable copper. Well, to make copper bioavailable, we got to fire up some pumps to put copper into key enzymes. Well, the mechanism to activate those pumps requires retinol. Not vitamin D, retinol, animal-based vitamin A. And so we just take a very simple stance. If you're worried about your vitamin D, take cod liver oil. It has both vitamin A and vitamin D in the right proportions. Mother Nature knows what she's doing. And just relax and don't overthink the requirements. Again, these ancestral foods that our predecessors consumed were beautifully designed, and they will solve the metabolic problems that we're facing even today. So just encourage people to really step away from the conventional drowning by vitamin D.
I want you to talk about the ratio of vitamin A to vitamin D of what you recommend for that.
Well, great question. On the intake side, what you'll find is that most forms of cod liver oil, certainly the Atlantic cod and related cod, has a ratio of 10 parts vitamin A to 1 part vitamin D. There's another form, Alaskan cod, that has actually a 20-to-1 ratio of vitamin D. I guess the water must be that much colder in Alaska than the Atlantic. I don't know why there would be that such a striking difference. But historically, our ancestors used a 10-to-1 ratio and had very good results. What I've noticed in the consulting work that I do, the ratio will appear differently in the blood work. Now, what people need to understand is I'm from Baltimore. My nickname is Baltimorean. I worship at the altar of Hopkins, pretty smart people there. And a very noted internist named Muhammad Amer was just studying in 2014, looking at what's the right level of storage D versus all-cause mortality. It's a very big study. Of course, this is all pre-COVID, but this was back when things were a little bit worsening. And what he found was that there was no clinical benefit having your storage D above 21 nanograms per deciliter. Now, to work on a lab report, the lab rate starts at 30 and goes up to 100. That's insanity on steroids. There's no clinical benefit above 21. What I found to be sort of the sweet spot for retinol in a blood test, looking at like retinol in the serum, is 65. So what's the ratio then? It's 3-to-1. 3 parts retinol to 1 part vitamin D. And when my clients get to that 3-to-1 ratio, they just seem to be coming. They feel better. And when it's not that ratio, especially when it's like a 1-to-1 or it's an inverted ratio where there's less retinol than vitamin D, they got all sorts of symptoms. So these fat-soluble vitamins are very important, but they're also very powerful. And then people need to step away from the conventional narrative and just get back to the basics. It's surprisingly simple how quickly the body responds to basic nutrient support that our ancestors would recommend.
Did you guys know that 97% of Americans are deficient in at least one mineral? It's true. You need more than a dozen minerals for your body to function at its best, but with the standard American diet, it's almost impossible. So here's where Beam Minerals comes in. Guess what? All you have to do, take one little shot of this one, one little shot of this one, and guess what? It looks like this, but it tastes like water. Take one shot, and boom, in 30 seconds a day, you're getting an entire thing of minerals instead of an entire cabinet of supplement bottles. So with Beam Minerals, we make mineral balance simple. So one of the things that I want people to understand is I have for years gone to the doctor, and every time the doctor says, hey, your iron's low, hey, your ferritin's low, every single time. And I've tried everything to the point where the doctor actually recommended to me, he said, Chantel, your iron and ferritin are so low, we have to have you go get an iron transfusion. Gave me a prescription for it, or like a, you know, ticket or whatever to go get that done. And I ended up having you on the podcast, and then you had told me, I want you to try adding copper to your diet. I started taking copper, and my ferritin levels, the only thing that's worked, by the way, because before that, I was trying iron supplements, which all that did was make me even more constipated, which made me feel worse, and I felt horrible. And so it was just awful. But anyway, so you literally, I owe you so much because you giving me that advice, I started adding copper into my diet, and then finally my ferritin levels have gone up. So I want you to kind of talk about what, for people who don't really understand ferritin and ferritin in the body and the reason why ferritin and copper work together so well, and kind of explain about serum ferritin and kind of what's happening in your cells.
How much time do we have?
We'll do the quick short version.
Yeah, you know what?
Make it for people who are just, you know, because a lot of our listeners, like, they are not doctors, you know, talking to people who, like, make it as simple to understand as possible, the way you explained it to me.
Sure. So there are three containers for iron in the body. It's important to start with the fundamentals. So the concentration of iron, the greatest concentration of iron, is in our hemoglobin, that's 70% of iron, and myoglobin, it's only about 10%. So I call it the bucket of iron, and how big a bucket is, right? And so myoglobin, hemoglobin, they're waiters carrying oxygen. That's where 80% of our iron is. Really, really important. Big bucket of iron. Then we have a teacup. Everybody knows what a teacup is, right? Tiny. And that's about 10% of the iron is in ferritin, which is an iron storage protein. It's only 10% of the iron. And here's the most important part. Ferritin is supposed to be inside the cell. It's not supposed to be showing up in the blood, folks. Let me come back to them. Then the third container is a thimble. I'm not sure many people know what thimbles are anymore. It's either so tiny. It's actually a cover for your finger when you're sewing, right? And it's a little tiny, little vessel, and it's holding 1% of the iron. It's called serum iron. It might be called total iron. It might be just called iron, but it's iron that's found in the serum, which is the fluid that carries the red blood cells. So there's actually iron in that fluid in addition to the iron in the red blood cell. And so it's a very tiny percent. So it's really tiny. But you need to know all three. You need to know hemoglobin, ferritin, and serum iron. And there's an unhealthy emphasis on ferritin now. It was never really studied until 1972. And what the iron biologists and hematologists at the elite level all agree on is that there's no iron in the ferritin in our blood. They are empty shotgun shells. People find that hard to believe. Why is my doctor, you know, focusing on it? Because your doctor is doing what they were trained to do. And this is not me making up stuff. These are some of the preeminent iron biologists and hematologists, like those young Woodward, just some amazing Dr. Kell, Douglas Kell. These are some very big names in the field. The point is, There's a lot of confusion about ferritin. I've actually renamed it. I call it ferritin because there's so many mistakes in interpreting it. And so it's the bookends of ferritin that is a problem. Too high, too low. Too high is really easy. You know that there is an inflammatory process, typically this in the liver. And what's happening is the iron is not being recycled properly in the liver where it needs to be. And the iron is being dumped into what's called the lysosome of the cell. That's the stomach of the cell. Amino acids are being cleaved off of the ferritin protein and it's being secreted into the bloodstream. And when it starts to show up bigger numbers inside the ferritin, you know you have a significant inflammatory problem. It can go into the thousands. And doctors typically don't get exercised until ferritin is over 2,000 or 3,000. Well, by then, it's almost too late. And the threshold that we use, the RCP, 20 to 30, it's a very tight reference. And where the confusion is when it gets below 20. That's when the wheels come off the bus. And that's when practitioners say, oh, you need an iron supplement, you need an iron infusion, thinking that the iron is going to get into the storage container. But in fact, what happens to iron like that, especially infused iron, iodine, it goes straight into the spleen and the liver and gets stuck there. It doesn't show up in ferritin. But what I've come to realize is that many of the people who have low ferritin typically have parasites. And for some reason, the spleen is not clearing the parasites. For some reason, the spleen is not properly recycling the iron the way it's supposed to. And then what's actually happening is because the parasites are building, there's another chemical, there's another protein that's made in the body. It's actually another hormone. It's called hepcidin. And hepcidin will rise in the face of low ferritin. Hepcidin is rising because there's pathogen. Here's the kicker. Doctors don't measure hepcidin. So out of sight, out of mind. I don't know about your hepcidin. I know your ferritin is low. I don't know about your hepcidin. If they would do the hepcidin, we'd see that it's high. And that's what's causing this imbalance because there's a pathogen. It's not being cleared properly in the spleen, causing the hepcidin to rise, causing ferritin to go low. And then it looks like there's an iron storage deficiency, where in fact, it's an iron dysregulation taking place. And that's really what I stress with people, is don't confuse the term iron deficiency with iron dysregulation. And just because the iron looks low on PEPA, on the blood test, don't assume that it's low in your tissue. Invariably, it's not. And this is the work of Bruce Ames, well-renowned scientist at UCL, UC Berkeley. And he did a major study in 2004 where he was able to prove that there's 10 times more iron in the tissue than what shows up in the blood. The blood work. And that's where the confusion is. Practitioners are not drawing a distinction between iron in the blood and iron in the tissue. And they're not doing needle biopsies of the liver. They're not doing MRIs of the liver to see what is the tissue concentration of iron. And you cannot assess tissue level of iron with a blood test. There is no marker there that in any way approximates what's happening at the tissue level.
Did you guys know that your thyroid's main food is iodine? And guess what? Mercury and other toxins gobble up your selenium, and your thyroid glands need selenium to convert iodine to thyroxine. So if you have mercury fillings and with all the toxins and mold, your selenium just gets gobbled up. So here's the bottom line. I take something called Peak Thyroid. It's got iodine, it's got copper, and it's got selenium. Everything you need to get your thyroid back to functioning without medicine. So go to ChantelRayWay.com/upgraded formulas. Use the coupon code ChantelRay to get a huge discount. So I'm going to ask a listener, I'm going to answer a listener question. So this is actually from Stephanie Wilkins in San Jose, California. She says, one of my favorite guests that you've ever had on the show is a guy named Morley Robbins, but sometimes he talks a little over my head. I love how you help him simplify. He's just a little too smart for his own good. Sometimes he talks like a scientist, right, and I can't totally understand him. I would like you to ask him if he ever comes back on the show about parasites. My aunt is a gastrointestinal doctor, and she says if you live in the U.S., you don't have parasites. And she did a stool test on me and told me that I don't have it. I have every symptom of having parasites, and I've heard you say on your podcast that most conventional stool tests that doctors do, 99.999% of the time, they don't find anything. Also, I've heard you say about your iron is low, and my iron is always low, and I'm sure it's because of a parasite. It's eating all my iron. My iron wouldn't just randomly be low. And I'm not going to read the rest of it because it's really long, but you get the gist of what she's saying. So I want you to break it down for her.
Right, I'll explain it. I'm not trying to lose people. I'm trying to let people know there's moving parts, and I want to make sure that people know that I know what I'm talking about. If I don't convey it properly, she's doing exactly what you need to do. Thump me in the nose and say, dumb it down, buddy. So I'm happy to do that. That gastroenterologist is absolutely not telling the truth. She's telling what she was trained. And there's a much simpler explanation. There's a world-renowned animal farmer. Her name is Pat Colvin, C-O-L-E-B-Y. She's no longer with us. She died a few years ago. And she wrote a series of books on animal farming, natural goat care, cattle care, sheep care, and horse care. Four of the most important books I ever read about human metabolism. And what she talked about in each of those four books is that any animal, folks, we're all animals. Sometimes we act that way too, right? But any animal who is copper deficient will have parasites. Any animal with parasites is copper deficient. Now, let me drive home this point. There's a famous study done by one of my all-time favorite researchers. His name is Leslie Clerbag. He's now 90 years old, still publishing. But he wrote a very important article in October of 2022 on the chronic copper deficiency plaguing humanity. And again, the mantra that runs medicine is you're anemic, the copper toxic. That is a lie. It's just the opposite. We have very little copper in our diet. There's very little copper in the soil now. And as a result, because copper is low, iron goes high. Where? In the tissue. Not going to show up in the blood. Because blood levels of iron are based on iron recycling. Well, iron recycling is run by copper. So where do the parasites hang out? In the spleen, in the liver, in other tissue besides the gut. And I don't know why they won't show up in a stool test. They often don't. But if you don't know about liver flukes, that's a very unsettling thing to read about, or read about what can get into the spleen or the gallbladder or other parts of your anatomy. And that's where they're residing. and they feed on iron and they disrupt copper metabolism. And what Pat Colby speaks about is how clearly they respond, or they are annihilated by copper. Copper is the original antimicrobial element on the planet. It was being used by Mother Nature for eons before silver came on the scene. You gotta understand that copper has been niched into the corner because of its amazing properties. But the gastroenterologist is wrong. Parasites do reside all over the planet, not just in certain third world countries. You're probably going to get exposed to more pathogens if you travel outside of the U.S., but don't think that you won't get parasites by residing in the continental U.S. And it is a copper deficiency dynamic, and people respond beautiful to the protocol to clear these pathogens. It's just a central part of the focus of the RCP.
So one of the things in your book you talk about, you say, cure your fatigue, how balancing three minerals and one protein is the solution that you're looking for. What are those three minerals that you're talking about and the one protein? Explain that in an easy way.
Yeah. We've touched on, or actually we've discussed all three of the minerals, but it's copper and iron and magnesium are the three minerals. And the protein is the copper protein called ceruloplasmin, which is what gives copper its bioavailability. Now, piecing it all together, when I cut my teeth on this work, I focused on magnesium. My worm was magnesium deficient. So you need more magnesium. And one practitioner pulled me inside and said, "Well, if it was that simple, we would have figured it out." And in my arrogance, my ignorance back then, I said, "Well, you don't understand the way I do." Well, he was right and I was wrong. I kept chipping away at it, learned about iron, learned about oxygen, learned that iron creates what's called oxidative stress, what gets burned up in oxidative stress. Magnesium, it's lost very quickly. Anytime we're under stress, we got a dead burn, had a bad meal, had a fight with somebody, had a car accident, any kind of stress. There's thousands of different stressors, right? There's the first element to go into the toilet is magnesium, quickly followed by the B vitamins. So magnesium and B vitamins, how quickly, those are water soluble. They go right into the urine and go right into the toilet. So I was fascinated by that. And then I discovered copper. Well, I learned about it. I shouldn't say I discovered it. Your friend there is getting too big for his britches. No, I didn't discover it, but I learned about it. And it's absolutely humbling, because the beauty of copper is it's the only element on the planet that can keep iron and oxygen under regulation without static. It's a really big deal. We live on a planet with 21% oxygen in the air. Oaks, it's a poison. We can't live without it, but we can't age without it either. And there's a very powerful relationship between the iron and oxygen. You know, yeah, the iron's carrying it, right? But iron interacts with it. And it creates rust, right? We know where rusty nail looks like, rusty pipe. What's creating rust on the inside? It's called plaque. It's called oxidative stress. And that oxidative stress is a fancy thing for rust. And what keeps it all in check is bioavailable copper. The protein, ceruloplasmin, it's the master antioxidant in our body. Everyone says, "Oh, I thought glutathione was the master antioxidant." Glutathione is the master antioxidant in the cell. Melatonin is the master antioxidant in the mitochondrion. But ceruloplasmin is the master antioxidant in our body. And it's what enables us to run regular living key functions in the body, but it's what keeps oxidative stress in check. We're always going to have oxidative stress in our body. Just like when we're driving our car, assuming we're driving cars that have engines, but when we're driving our car, there's always exhaust being given off. It's when the exhaust becomes billowing black smoke, then we know we've got a problem. Well, the oxidative stress, that phrase means that the level of oxidants, the level of reactive oxygen species, has increased to the point where it's stressing the antioxidant capacity of the body. And that means that ceruloplasmin and with failing of deoxyoxidant enzymes are overwhelmed by the amount of oxidative stress. And so that's why the protocol focuses on key nutrients, but especially the copper, to restore the ability to activate oxygen, to release energy, so that we can run out.
So your liver normally takes copper from your bloodstream and puts it into ceruloplasmin proteins. And then the ceruloplasmin is released into the blood plasma. And then the ceruloplasmin carries the copper into the tissues. Is that? I'm just trying to like kind of make it so that we can understand it. Because that portion of it, explain that. Did I explain that correctly?
You did a very good job. You did a better job than most doctors would. So I commend you for that. The part that's really hard to comprehend, there's 3 or 4 articles I found over the years. I'm not sure I've read thousands, but 3 or 4 that really stood out in terms of the explanation of what this protein, this copper protein does. It has then in different enzyme functions. So the way my friend Ben Edwards, who's a physician down in Lubbock, Texas, describes it, it's like a Swiss Army knife. And you know how many different functions a Swiss Army knife has? Dozens and dozens. Well, that's ceruloplasmin. It can do many different functions. But one of its most important functions is to transport copper around the body to the tissue, especially to the mitochondria. The mitochondria live on copper. Every mitochondria, there's 40 quadrillion in our body, but every mitochondria has a little blue swimming pool in the center. It's called the matrix. And it's blue for a reason, because it has copper in it. And so mitochondria need to be supported and supplied with copper regularly. And that's one of the most important jobs of ceruloplasmin. What's interesting is that in the mid-70s, Earl Friedan, famous iron biologist at Florida State University, theorized that that's what one of his principal jobs was. And he got smacked for that theory. And what in more recent era, 2017, Zach Baker, and then in 2021, Paul Kobine said, no, actually, Dr. Friedan was right back in the 70s. That's exactly one of its most important jobs. And it's just not taught anymore. And so it isn't just taking the mineral. You got to be thinking about, is it making the enzymes that it needs to make? And that's really why I try to distinguish myself some other pundits who talk about copper, because I really focus on enzymes, especially, really important. I focus on what those copper enzymes do to neutralize iron and oxygen. Very often, they don't even talk about the iron problem or the oxygen problem. And then the part that I think is especially important for people to understand is that there's some positions about, you got to take more zinc, you got to take more retinol, blah, blah. Or don't take retinol, but you got to take more zinc. Well, that flies in the face of the research that I've done. And I find it alarming that people don't know about the importance of retinol to activate the copper pumps. Not my idea. Cousins and Barber, 1987. It's a very important article to know about. And it's well accessed on the animal. And then that requires retinol to do that. And then there are so many reasons why excess zinc will shut down copper metabolism. It's hard to find the time to talk about it. But the point is, I don't just talk about the mineral. I talk about the enzymes. I talk about the most important properties that they mention. And I talk about within the RCP, why these key nutrients are so important to understand. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yes. So one of the things I want you to answer is, like, if someone says, you know, all of the things that they say causes parasites, you know, fatigue, stomach issues. I mean, there's just so many things of parasites. What would you say if you were going to, obviously, we'd want to supplement with copper. That would be number one to get rid of the parasites. What else would you do to explain to someone, okay, if you want to get rid of parasites and do a parasite cleanse? Because I know that I've done a few parasite cleanses and they were so detoxifying that, you know, it almost is like that Herxheimer reaction where you just feel so miserable and then you can't do anything. So if someone was like, I know for a fact I have parasites, what would your recommendation be? Do A, B, and C. What would that look like?
Well, we all have parasites. They're part of our physiology.
Right.
It doesn't matter where you were. You got them.
Right.
When they play a role in the jaw, in the butt, again, it's when they get out of control. That's
control, yeah.
So we are taught to fear pathogens. They're there for a reason. So we have to accept that. So if you've got them, you suspect you have them, you can confirm that you've got them. We don't recommend detoxins in the root cause protocol. They're too harsh. Every detox protocol that I know of requires energy to support it. Most people don't have enough energy to get through the day before they get to the detox. And then they're going to add insult and injury with a detox. The fact of the matter is there is a blueprint that runs our body. Get it? Blueprint, like the blue pool in the matrix. So anything blue inside the body is a good guy. Well, the blueprint runs on energy. And so what we really focus on in the glucose protocol is cure your fatigue. Create more energy. And when the body and the blueprint has energy, it knows exactly what to do to clear these pathogens. And the problem we've got is that you and I are engaged in a very switched-on conversation, and we're exchanging information about 2,000 bits per second, which is pretty fast. We're clipping along, right? Well, the part of our brain that runs our bodies called the hypothalamus, and it thinks 2 million times faster than you and I can talk. And I think it's the height of insanity for us to think that we can outthink the hypothalamus. What does the hypothalamus want? It wants minerals and energy. Give it the nutrients and the substrates that it needs, and it will solve the problem. That's the whole basis of the protocol, is stop attacking the guest, strengthen the host. Ignore the enemies, ignite the energy. It's a completely different paradigm of healing. And so if you suspect you have these pathogens, do the root cause protocol. And what you're probably needing to do in addition to that, it's part of the protocol, but people tend to overlook it. You got to do blood donations regularly to lower your iron footprint. And You know, you need to dump your fears. But we spelled fear differently. Spelled S-E, Python, A-R. And then the word has a different meaning because you can see the symbol for iron. So then it means iron attracts rust. And when you don't feel right, and it's been going on for a while, you begin to get fearful. And when we get fearful, we become a magnet for iron. And what we've got to do is do emotional release work, EFT, motion code, body code, editing, some proven modality to help me release the fear that you're broken, release the fear that you're being punished, release the fear that something happened that you didn't know about. It's whatever it is, got to release the fear. When clients do that, there's an immediate uptick in their response. And it's central to recovery is to release those hidden fears that are hanging out in your psyche. You may not be aware of it, but I guarantee you it's a central part of why you don't feel well.
All right. Well, one of the things that I want you to talk about is, you know, what supplements you should stop taking immediately. Like, what one of the things that I think is that what happens is, you know, you listen to all these different podcasts, and I know I'm guilty of this as well. And someone's like, well, you need this and you need this supplement, or you look at this. And then people just start taking so many supplements. It's overloading the liver and it's not good. So I want you to talk about some of the ones. Obviously, we talked about vitamin D. Stop taking that immediately. What else do they need to stop taking that's making them worse?
Most entertaining consult I did was a client who came in with two shopping bags full of supplements. She took them up. I mean, she took them up. She takes these every day. She said, yes. So we overwhelm our system. We're all guilty of it. And the whole basis of the RCP is to simplify. Get it down to the very essence of what's needed. Again, you know, the cornerstone of our approach is to create energy and to clear exhaust. It's very what we're trying to do. And we're worshiping at the altar of making more cerebral plasma. So what we are doing is, what do we need to do to ensure that? And what do we need to stop doing to prevent it from being made? You got to stop taking iron supplements. You got to stop taking ascorbic acid. You got to stop taking.
Okay, wait. Let's talk about that one. Let's talk about ascorbic acid. I want you to explain to people what that is in a simple term and why that is so important that they stop taking it.
Well, Mother Nature made vitamin C a long time ago. I don't know when she did it, but it was really important then. But real vitamin C, whole food vitamin C, has an engine, has four wheels, has a steering wheel, and there's a cover. Well, that's pretty much what the vitamin C molecule was all about. The engine in vitamin C is an enzyme called pyrosinase. Pyrosinase is probably one of the most important enzymes on planet Earth. It's prevalently found, not just in citrus, it's found in mushrooms. Oh, mushrooms. Yeah, mushroom tyrosinase is incredibly important. And guess where mushrooms hang out? They hang out in mold. Oh, so you mean maybe Mother Nature might have a solution to the mold problem we've got? Yeah, it's called tyrosinase. But tyrosinase is the enzyme, and it's very, very important for our physiology. Ascorbic acid is that cover of the car. But there's no moving parts. Ascorbic acid is just the color of the car. And it was first, I just learned this the other day, it was first synthesized in Germany at Hoffmann La Roche Labs in 1934. And what's interesting is that in 1937, they gave Albert van Goorjean a Nobel Prize for discovering ascorbic acid. He had nothing to do with what they did at Roche. It's a great mystery about How did that Nobel Prize come about? And everyone thinks that Sven Gorgi discovered ascorbic acid. He was actually studying something completely different. In any event, like ascorbic acid is very disruptive because it blocks copper uptake. That's not a good thing. It increases iron absorption. That's not a good thing. You think you need more iron, but you don't. You really don't. But it blows up the ceruloplasmin protein that is so important for our health and well-being. And people say, well, yeah, but they're using high-dose IVs to cure cancer. Well, what you need to understand is that ascorbic acid creates a lot of hydrogen peroxide. And hydrogen peroxide overwhelms the cancer cell and kills it. I get that. But cancer is like a teenager doing drugs. Right? It's actually a great analogy if you understand cancer. And so do we shoot teenagers doing drugs or do we try to rehabilitate? And so the whole basis of cancer treatment is based on killing the cell, not rehabilitating the cell. And ascorbic acid is a proven way to overwhelm the cell. And that's not solving the problem. It's causing the cancer. In fact, it's actually tied to iron. I was just reading an article this morning that had reference after reference after reference after reference after reference identifying iron as the cause of the cancer, which I've known, but I've got some amazing citations now that I can refer to. But people had been trained to believe that ascorbic acid, the very first synthetic vitamin on planet Earth, is going to solve their needs, when in fact, it's copper. It's the copper enzymes that have been pushed aside and using a synthetic derivative of whole food vitamin C that is not doing what you think it's doing inside the body. So hopefully that gives people more to play with.
Yeah, so I just want to kind of explain it. I want to just explain what I heard you say. Yeah. So, as you know, first of all, taking vitamin C orally, there's two different kinds of vitamin C that you can get. Like you can get whole food vitamin C, and then you can get ascorbic acid. And then the ascorbic acid is also what they're using in IVs. And so all these IV places now are really pushing like massive, massive, like high doses of vitamin C. And they're saying, you know, everyone knows, well, yes, whole food vitamin C is vital to your body's healing process. And it's a great immune booster and it's antiviral and all of this. But what they don't understand is that ascorbic acid is different than whole food vitamin C. And that's where people get confused. And when they're going to get this IV vitamin therapy, they're getting huge, huge doses of it. And then that can actually cause you to feel worse.
Yeah, people don't know about ceruloplasmin. They don't know about whole food vitamin C. They think that what the orange has is ascorbic acid. Well, it does have ascorbic acid, but it has so much more. Nobody talks about that. Practitioners are only aware of what they've been taught. And so these centers where they're pumping people full of ascorbic acid, there's a price to pay for that. And it's a tragic misunderstanding about the role of this vitamin. It's a very important antioxidant, but the enzymes that are the antioxidants, like garooxidase enzyme, catalase enzyme, glutathione peroxidase, these are very powerful enzymes. They're clearing oxidative stress, but they're 1,000 times more powerful than a vitamin. 1,000 times more powerful. And so it's hard to imagine that, well, why didn't they tell us that? They have no incentive to tell you that. And so it's just been going on forever. And it's just, look, people are, they misunderstand. They've been misled and misfed for over a century.
So let's go back to that list. So we know that ascorbic acid is one of them. Vitamin D is another one that we should take out of our diet, not put in. What else?
Calcium. You don't need supplemental calcium. Again, a lot of people are like, what? But I've got osteopenia. I've got osteoporosis. It's like the loss of calcium from your bone matrix is not what you have come to understand. There's two critical enzymes. There's an enzyme called acid phosphatase. And what it does is it scrapes away inside the bone marrow, or as a bone matrix, the bone matrix, and calcium gets released. Well, that enzyme is activated by iron. The enzyme to rebuild the bone matrix is called alkaline phosphatase, and it's activated by magnesium. Very different function to take the calcium out and to reload it. But in addition to that alkaline phosphatase, there's two more enzymes that are copper dependent that no one knows about. So in order to build bone, you've got to have collagen, which is strong, and you have to have elastin, which is flexible. The most important part of it is putting those two proteins together. There's only one enzyme that does it. It's called lysyl oxidase. Now, to put this in the context, 45% of our connective tissue, including the bone, 45% of our connective tissue, 45% of the cells in our body is connective tissue. And this lysyl oxidase is instrumental in knitting together these proteins so they have strength and flexibility, so it gives them entanglement. And then there's another enzyme, people have never heard of it. It's called ascorbate. Sounds like ascorbate, right? Ascorbate oxidase. And it plays a very powerful role. It's a copper-dependent enzyme. Binds up fluoride to prevent fluoride from causing loss of the minerals in the bone matrix. And so fluoride is not our friend. Ascorbate oxidase is our friend. Alkaline phosphatase is our friend. And taking calcium supplements, taking vitamin D supplements, and taking Fosamax are not going to restore integrity to the bone matrix. So a lot of confusion around that. And what's really eating away at the bone matrix is iron activating that acid phosphatase. So we got to stop worrying about the calcium and focus on the nutrients. They're going to restore energy production, restore balance, and restore the bone rebuilding that's so important in the environment.
I don't know about you guys, but I am stressed. And if you're feeling overwhelmed this holiday season, then I get it. With all the family get-togethers, it is just a relentless source of stress. But anyway, there is something that I've got called Stress Guardian. And it's actually made by Bioptimizers, the people who make the magnesium breakthrough, which I love, love, love. But anyway, they are literally made this new product. It has 14 adaptogenic herbs, and it just regulates your stress. I just actually took some right this second, and it's awesome. If you go to stressguardian.com/wasteaway and put in waste away for 10% off your first order. It's stressguardian.com/wasteaway. Go there now.
So good.
So if you would say, if you had to kind of talk to somebody about their diet and you said, all right, what is my favorite diet? And there's so many different things out there. What would you say is kind of the gist? Like, if you were going to give someone, like, is it, you know, the paleo diet? What kind of diet do you think people live with the best results overall?
Yeah. So first of all, humans are the only animals that ask each other what to eat. All the other animals know exactly what to eat. We have this. We have this. I don't need to ask each other, what should we eat? So what I found to be consistently the best all-around, most stable diet is what's laid out by the Western Eight Place. Sally Fallon has done a masterful job of educating people about these ancestral foods, the book, Nourishing Traditions. It's a cornerstone, I think, in healthy eating. You can get it on Amazon for like $1. It's not an expensive book, but it's just chock full of information.
And what was the name of that book again?
Nourishing Traditions. And it's all based on the ancestral diet. It's based on the research of Weston A. Price, who was a famous dentist out of Cleveland, Ohio, at the turn of the last century. And a very tragic accident took place. It was in before the 1920s. He did a root canal, his son was 9 or 10 years old. And his son died following that root canal. And it was obviously a shock to Dr. Price and his wife. But they set out to do a decade of research around the world to identify indigenous communities to find perfect teeth and then find out what they need to produce perfect teeth. And Dr. Price was a meticulous scientist, and it's documented in his book. That's just legendary that people need to know about the ancestral diet. And it's just its fundamentals. But it's all based on making sure that there's minerals in the soil, the tremendous importance of retinol in that diet. And what Dr. Price's going in proposition was, he had two expectations. He said the people with the healthiest teeth would be vegetarian, and they would be eating a low-fat diet. And he was wrong on both counts. He was very quick to point that out. And what he discovered is that upwards of 65% of the calories that people were eating in these 14 different communities was fat. And every community, all of these communities, have animal protein from ants in Maasai tribes to whale blood in Inuit Indians up in Alaska. And people don't realize how critical these nutrient-dense foods are to our health and well-being. But it's all laid out in his book, and also the Weston A. Price chapters are all over the world. And I think people can lock in on the genius of that approach with that community.
So I want to just repeat a couple things that I feel like you've taught me, and the things that you have to stop taking right away. Stop taking iron supplements. Stop taking vitamin D3. Stop taking calcium. Stop taking zinc. Stop taking any of the drugstore once a day, multivitamins. Mm-hmm. And then we've talked about stop taking the ascorbic acid. Obviously, getting rid of high fructose corn syrup and all of that, using industrialized omega-6 oils soybean oil, canola oil, cottonseed oil, and then get rid of anything that has fluoride, like stop using fluoride toothpaste, stop having tap water that has fluoride. So those are kind of the ones that stand out to me that are the biggest ones. Any that I miss that you've kind of gone over?
No. And what we found is that people who do that, they start to feel better just by doing that before they even get to this, begin to start incorporating the elements of phase one or phase two or phase three. I think you still need to follow through, but it's very, very important for people to complete those stops and make sure they're not aggravating their metabolism with those supplements that people think are the cornerstone of good nutrition. They're not. And again, the reference point for saying don't do these is because they were disrupting the synthesis of ceruloplasmin.
All right, one last thing that I want to go over with you is as far as anything else that we need to do as far as like little hacks, like that you would say, okay, one of the things that I make sure I do is get 10 minutes of sun in my eyes every day, or just little things like that. If you said like those little kind of hacks that you do in a day, what would that look like for you?
In addition to getting more sunlight, that's always a good thing. Movement is, you don't get enough movement in there again. Express more gratitude for what you have. A question that I encourage my clients to ask themselves, how much better can it get? It flips the whole narrative. Because when we don't feel right, when things don't seem to be going our way, you go into the woe is me paradigm. But when you flip it and say, oh, well, how much better can it get? That's a very powerful way to reset your thought process. Then the other is, I encourage people to realize that whatever is confronting you, whatever is challenging you, it's not being done to you, it's being done for you. It's a stepping stone for your growth and development. And I know how disorienting it can be to not feel well, to be fatigued, what have you. And it's no fun. And I grew up in a very sickly family. I'd experienced it. By the grace of God, I lived a pretty healthy life. Don't take any medications at all. I'm 71. I take supplements, but I don't take meds. And all the people that I know my age, most of them are taking meds. And so, you know, gotta avoid that. But the key is recognizing that these setbacks that you're experiencing are there to teach you lessons, and embrace that. I think the one last thing that I encourage clients to do regularly, do an internet diet. Stay off the internet for like 30 days. Just get it out of your life. You can't imagine what that will do. It's hard to even fathom doing it for a day. Oh, I got to do this. And again, most of the information that you're looking at, on, first of all, the information that you access on a Google search is 3% of what's on the internet. Then 7% you don't even have access to. So it's like we gain a very refined amount of information. But it's just the information you're accessing, typically it's not being done by people who understand bilingual competence. So you're getting a skewed, biased perspective, and that's not healthy. And so what we've tried to do with the root cause protocol is give people a much broader understanding of how the body works. So I would just encourage people to think about these concepts and of simplifying your life, and grateful for what you have, ask how much better can it get, kind of step away from the internet for a little while. I mean, wherever possible, try to get more confident in the diet. It's a really important component that is easily overlooked. And I think the challenge we face now is that it's not easily found in the food system. And I think what we're really faced with is having to get it in a supplementary form. And the reason why I say that is I'm reading a study from 2021 from France. What people need to know is that in 1987, when glyphosate was being introduced as a farming cornerstone, you gotta use glyphosate, you gotta use Roundup to get rid of your weeds. Well, people in Europe said no, but people in France said hell no, we're never going to use glyphosate. So they've been opposed to glyphosate from the beginning. Well, the data was really collected in like 2017, 30 years later, and it took a while to massage the data. But the bottom line is that this study is highlighting the fact that 99% of French citizens, 99%, are peeing glyphosate in their nose. Now, is that a problem? It's a problem because glyphosate chelates copper. It chelates many minerals, but it chelates copper a billion times faster than it chelates magnesium or calcium. It chelates copper 1,000 times faster than it chelates zinc or iron. Now, we can't relate to a billion times faster. We can't even relate to 1,000 times faster. We can relate to 1,000 times faster. And so glyphosate is pulling these minerals out of our soil, but the crosshairs are clearly on copper. Why? Because it's what gives us sovereignty. It's our connection back to source. Copper has a magnetic attraction to sunlight. So when Chantel said, spend more time in the sun, you're doing your copper a favor when you do that. And so these are things, these are aspects of copper that people don't know about. And it is so central to life on a planet with oxygen, and yet it's not taught in doctor school. So it's important to realize that there is a mechanism in our body that needs to be provided in our diet, but now I think it needs to be supplemented, especially to support our diet, to enable us to keep the iron and the oxygen at bay, but to make more energy and clear the exhaust. That's really what it comes down to. And it's the word that I loved in years that Yogi Berra coined many, many years ago. He was famous for his words, but one of his words was simplexity. That's the simplexity of the Root Cause Protocol, is to optimize your copper so that you can really regulate and manage your environment so you get optimal energy. That's really what it's about. And as your listener pointing out, yes, I can get lost in the verbiage and in the pamphlets, but it's not to confuse people. It's to let people know that there are layers and layers of layers on inflammation. And I do my level best, but it really helps me to have conversations with Chantel and people like Chantel, because even with my best of intentions, I can blather on about this pathway or that pathway. And it's not trying to overwhelm you. It's just trying to let you know that at the end of the day, there's just a few minerals we need to worry about. And we need to really focus on that protein. And we need to simplify our diet, less than 8 points, and manage our stress and realize that this is not an easy planet to live on, but we're here to learn our lessons and help each other. And that's really what this podcast is all about, trying to help each other, trying to lower the stress and facilitate information that's going to give us a better day. So that's why.
Let me ask you one last question. I want you to explain what forms of copper are they in supplements and which one has the higher bioavailability and the better absorption in your body?
Ideally, the best copper comes from food. Hands down. I grew up in Baltimore, Cleveland Dairy was the dairy that they deserved milk. And their jingle, I can still remember the jingle. I remember learning when I was like 3 or 4 years old. Milk and butter and eggs and cheese, fresh from the farm to you. If you don't want a cow, call Cloverland now. Northfield 9222. I mean, oh my God, 65 years later, I'm still thinking about that jingle. But what I found, Chantel, was in 1925, a very important researcher, James McCard, discovered that the foods that copper was most attracted to in that regular diet were milk, butter, eggs and cottage cheese. Cottage cheese. But that was back in the 1920s. That was a century ago. And then they would have those every day. Think about the average.
Okay, but I have to tell you something. This is a thing. So, like, you know how most people, like, crave brownies or whatever. The one thing I always tell my husband is what I crave all the time is, like, a slice of Ezekiel bread with cottage cheese. Like, my body is like, if you said to me, what are you craving right now? Almost every day is like a slice of Ezekiel toast with cottage cheese. And so I must be really low on copper and I need that. But keep going.
You have an instinctual response to those foods because historically they would have had the nutrients you were looking for. Back in the 1930s, our ancestors got 4 to 6 milligrams of copper a day. By the 60s, it had dropped to 2 to 5 milligrams a day. Now the RDA, the modern RDA, is 0.9 milligrams of copper. It is absolutely an insult to our intelligence and our integrity as a human being. We need way more copper. The food does not have it, but the milk, butter, eggs, and cheese of yesterday, and the beef liver that our ancestors ate. I remember being raised on beef liver. You said, at least once a week. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe we're having liver again. But my mom grew up in the country and she didn't have all corn roots. Well, people love their barbecue now, right? Love my barbecue. You know what barbecue stands for? It's a French term. Nose, barb, cue, tail. Nose to tail eating. You're eating all of the nutrients of the animal. But you're eating the whole animal. That's what barbecue really means. And that's all lost to barbecue sauce now. I want my ribs with a really good sauce. People don't know what they're eating. And so, to answer your question, what's the best source? Like, ideally, it is food. It's not, I don't think it's available. When I'm reading about French citizens peeing glyphosate in the urine, I'm like, I'm terrified. And so I think we're down to supplemental foods. And to what I'd read in the research is that copper bisglycinate is one of the most bioavailable forms because of the unique structure of the copper and the glycine, the two glycine. I'm not a big fan of Jason's approach with copper sulfate. If I was a microbe, I'd probably be excited. We're not microbes. And he has his whole perspective, and I really admire him for his program with what he does, but he doesn't do any blood testing. He doesn't do any assessment of what's happening. He just bases it, flood your body with these nutrients and go about your business. Well, I don't think that that's telling the same story. And I think people need to have feedback and say, am I getting the benefit of what I'm doing? There's copper chlorides. I don't think that's a particularly good one. The one that's really the raging popular form is GHK copper. That's a copper peptide that Lauren Pickard discovered in the early 1970s. He just passed away a couple of months ago. I don't know whether people know about him, but this legendary figure who focused on copper and the importance of copper for skin health. Me and his daughters created a company called Reverse Skin Aging. If you don't know about that company, then you better, when you finish with your internet diet, get on to reverseskinaging.com and you'll be mesmerized by what they've got. But I'm trying to think of other forms of copper.
So hold on. Let me repeat what I heard you say, that copper by glycerate is
bisglycinate.
What? Say that again.
Bisglycinate.
Thank you. Copper bisglycinate or glycinate it helps you to absorb directly into the bloodstream a little bit better, and that type of copper has much higher bioavailability than copper citrate. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what the research tells us.
Okay. And then how much are you recommending? Because like you said, different people recommend different amounts. If someone was starting, I want you to a brand new person, because I will tell you this, please, please listen to me. I gave a friend of mine came over and I was telling her about your podcast. I was like, you got to listen to it, blah, blah, blah. And I had some copper. She came over for a walk first thing in the morning and she was like, oh yeah. She's like, well, great. I want to try it. So I gave her some copper. I think I gave her three copper pills. I think they were each like maybe 3 milligrams each. And within literally, I'm not joking, like probably 3 minutes, she looks at me and she's like, oh my gosh, those pills made me so nauseous. She's like, can I get like some crackers or like a piece of toast? And then I gave her, you know, a piece of toast quickly and like some crackers right away. And she was fine in a couple minutes. But she took that on an empty stomach and I had no idea. But I mean, it was almost instantly where she took those vitamins on an empty stomach and she immediately was like, oh my gosh, I feel so nauseous. So talk about kind of weaning yourself up on where you should start and how you should go up.
Yeah, so the Recuperate that we developed back in 2022 has desiccated beef liver, spirulina, and turmeric in it. So it's got food already in the capsule. It's a 2 milligram dose of copper. And what we tell folks is start with one, always with a meal. Copper, what your friend experienced was, it wasn't just that it was copper without food. Copper has a very powerful property of mobilizing iron. And we have iron in our stomach. We have iron in our intestines. We have iron in our brain, all of our body. But when we have a bolus of iron, if you gave her 9 milligrams of iron, that was a lot of iron to suddenly throw into her system. That mobilized things that she hadn't been mobilized for a while. But we start with one capsule, 2 milligrams, with a meal, work your way up to 2 capsules, so you can get 4 milligrams of copper. And I tell clients, you may try a third and see what you experience. But what I'll tell you, Chantel, is I've got many clients, especially people with type 2 diabetes, they find that they feel really good when they have 5 or 6 a day, 5 or 6 capsules a day. So they're getting 10 to 12 milligrams of copper. And what they tell me is that they feel like they have more control over their blood sugar than they've ever had in their adult life. So we don't realize how dependent we are on this minimum. And it needs to be in a bioavailable form. We encourage people, we really strongly recommend do it with a meal. We're going to have far better results. You're not going to have that upset stomach. And the most important thing is start low, go slow, and see how you respond. And you're both the lab rat and the scientist, and start to experiment and see what you experience. And just be curious. It's all right, seeing you, right? But be more curious than concerned, and see how your body responds to these very subtle changes in diet, subtle changes in focusing on what to take, what not to take, and see how you respond to the Recuperate in the course of your daily routine.
I love it. Well, Morley, you know, I'm just so grateful for you. You're doing so much to help people and just changing people's lives. You have been such a blessing in my life. I'm so grateful for you. I can't even describe how grateful I am for you. It almost makes me just tear up. I really just like deep down from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you. I'm very grateful for all that you do. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I want you to tell listeners where they can find you and where they can follow you.
Yeah, they're interested in my book. It's called Curing Your Fatigue. Get on your favorite online purveyor. It's not going to be in the bookstores. Website, rcp123.org. There's a ton of information there. There's over 200 podcasts there. But there's also, you can access what's called the Root Cause Protocol Handbook. It's recently been updated, about 80 pages of just great information about what's the basis, what's the logic, what are the steps to take There's social media, Facebook, Instagram. I think those are the two principal platforms. And then people invariably have questions for me. I look forward to that. Well, my email is my first and last name, melanierobbins@gmail.com. And for those brazen few who always want to have a conversation, give me a call at 847-922-8061. And Jed Dell, the best part of my day is when people call me and they answer the phone and then they go hypoxic. Who was expecting you to answer? I said, I don't know. So I'm happy to get those calls because sometimes people just need some immediate feedback. And I always look forward to the exchange that takes place.
Guys, I just want to interrupt for just a second. And I want you to hear Paul Saladino talk about why liver is so important. And if you don't like liver, we have another option for you.
Your ancestors were eating liver. And the reason that this sort of wisdom has been passed down is because liver is very nutritious. It's basically nature's multivitamin. If you look at the nutrients in meat, they're great. You've got zinc, you got B6, you got B12, you got some K2. But if you look at liver, it really complements what's in muscle meat. And there are many unique nutrients found in organs, specifically liver as a powerhouse of these, that are difficult to obtain outside of liver. Like meat and organs are like peanut butter and jelly. They just go together. They're supposed to be eaten together. The easiest way to eat liver is just to do it raw. If you don't want to eat liver raw, you can cook it. But the reason that I like to do it raw is because there are unique nutrients in liver that are probably somewhat degraded when you cook the liver.
This really is like the most nutrient-rich supplements that you can find. And they are amazing. I have tried them. I absolutely love them. So just go to heartandsoil.co, use the coupon code Chantal Ray, and save some money there.
I forgot to ask one quick question that was a listener question, and this one is from Laura, and she is talking about, I won't read the whole question, I'll just sum it up, but she's talking about how she's currently on Synthroid, and she's heard some different people talking about armor thyroid or getting on a naturally desiccated thyroid and kind of the pros and cons of that. And then she goes into talking about why are so many people now on thyroid medicine, and does that have anything for nutrient deficiencies of why everyone is got thyroid issues right now? So just touch on that real quick. I know I didn't forgot that question. I just looked down and realized I forgot to ask you that one.
No, I happy to respond. I'm trying to think of that. There's our health coach in Sweden, and embarrassing, I can't think of a name right now. Oh, I will text it to you. I did a 4-part series with her about thyroid and minerals and thyroid and copper in particular. And I'm so embarrassed, I can't think of her name. She's going to slap my wrist. But an important realization on the RCP when we started to promote the stops and the starts. I don't know when it really began or who the first person was, but people discovered they didn't need their as much thyroid med. Then they discovered they didn't need thyroid meds at all. And there was, and we never, ever intended to start this program and this protocol with the intention of changing people's routine. It was just, we wanted people to feel better. And what happened was they felt better. They didn't need chemical support. People may have heard the name Broda Barnes. He's a famous, world-renowned physician who had thousands of clients, but only four that actually died. But I think three of the four died when he was on vacation. So it's just, the guy had an impeccable track record in any years on his thyroid. Well, our thyroid is different today than it was back in the 60s when he was at his peak. But more recently, Jens Maytag, who's a world-renowned endocrinologist in Germany. So in Europe, they have endocrinologists. Here in North America, we have endocrinologists. They're very different. And they're training used to them. And what Dr. Maytag was talking about in 2012 was a relationship between the thyroid and copper. And what he found was a relationship between T4 and serum copper and T3 and the ferrooxidase enzyme function of cerebral plasma. That's a lot of big words, I realize, but what he was measuring was this relationship. And the part that people need to understand, which will disrupt your understanding, is that the way you've been taught is that this bow tie, well, gland runs your body. That's not true. That's absolutely not true. It responds to the body, but it does not run the body. And you've been taught that the T3 hormone, the active form, is what sparks the mitochondria. Gets them going. Right? It wakes them up. Gets them running. That's not true. What T3 is, it's an oxygen sensor. And what it's sniffing is oxygen being properly burned in the mitochondria? Is the oxygen being turned into water? How much oxidative stress is taking place in the mitochondria? And where is it hanging out? At complex four, which is where the most important function of the mitochondria is. And what are all hormones? They are signaling peptides, every last one of them. And signaling peptide, like T3, when it senses that the oxygen is not burning right, it sends a signal back to the liver to do what? We need more of that ceruloplasmin to supply more copper to the mitochondria so we can burn the energy, burn the oxygen more cleanly to make more energy. All of the mechanics, the dynamics of the thyroid have been turned upside down and backwards. The thyroid does not run a body. What the thyroid really relies on is retinol, which is
vitamin A.
Vitamin A, and it gets broken down, needs to be broken down, like we conjugate verbs in a foreign language. We need to break down, we need to conjugate the retinol into its component parts. What are the most important component parts of retinol are nuclear receptors called, one of them is called RXR, retinoid X receptor. And what does RXR do? It hooks up with the thyroid receptor, TR, and those two working together, they must be together in order to synthesize new T4 in the nucleus. That's how it works, folks. And if there's no retinol, there's no T4.
So are you suggesting that people need to start taking vitamin A?
Absolutely.
How much vitamin A would you suggest that they need to take?
Well, anyone who's hypothyroid is vitamin A deficient. What runs the American diet? A low-fat diet. I sit in Starbucks and I listen to people order skinny lattes all day long. They're terrified. They're terrified of high fat. Terrified.
So how much vitamin A would you suggest?
3,000 units.
This has been awesome, Morley. We've gone way over on time. I appreciate it so much. We're going to have you back. I know you've been on so many times, but you are our number one favorite guest. We love you so much. Tell everyone again, if you want to go to, I'll just repeat it. It's either therootcauseprotocol.com, rcp123.org. Go there and we will have you back if you're willing for another episode.
Absolutely. As you can well understand, I love questions.
Yes.
Because it gives me a chance to really lay it out. And again, it's been a while since you've done a blood test. I bet we can even do that. We can do another.
Yes, I'm going to do another one and we're going to look at it. That will be super fun. And if you have a question that you want answered, go to questions@chantelrayway.com. We appreciate you being on today and we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoy the podcast, it would mean the world to us for you to leave a review on iTunes to get this podcast out to others that may have the same questions that you do. And as always, if you have a question that you want answered, email those to questions@chantelrayway.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.